विष्णुपादाय कृष्णप्रेष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिवेदान्त स्वामिनि नामिने नमस्ते सरस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्य देशकारिणे जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीदास आदि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्णा कृष्ण कृष्ण हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय So I'm sorry that Maharaj was not here. I came to hear him, and now I have to hear myself, and you have to hear me. So hopefully it will be worth your time. So let's go to the 18th chapter and verse Sarvagu Yatamam Bhuya, maybe 66, something like that. 64, thank you. So the idea behind today's verse, actually maybe I will do a number of verses, is to look at the essence of the Bhagavad Gita. The Bhagavad Gita is the crown jewel of Indian, or you could say Vedic spirituality. It contains the condensed information from all the Vedas, the Puranas, the Itihasas, the Upanishads. And of the Bhagavad Gita, there are 700 verses, there are 18 chapters, and by the time we get to the 18th chapter, Krishna has basically spoken deep philosophy, and he's finally gotten to the 64th verse, and the Acharyas explain, Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti in particular, that by this time Arjuna is bewildered again. So much information overload. So what should I do now? So, Krishna is now going to summarize the summary of the Vedas in this verse, in the next 8 verses. Starting with 1864, where he says, Sarvagayatamam bhūyah śrīmame paramam vachah, iṣṭosi me dridamiti tato vakṣāmi tehitam. Sarvagayatamam bhūyah, the word bhūyah in Sanskrit means again. Again I'm going to speak. Sarvagayatamam, so the guya means secret. Guyatara, in Sanskrit when you add these extensions, endings, tara means more secret. Tama means the most secret. So Krishna is now giving the most secret, sarva, of all secrets, the highest secret. And he's giving it again in this verse. Okay, so those are the first line. Oh, sorry, can we go back to the Sanskrit? And then he says, Shrunume paramam vachah. So listen to my words, paramam. So let's go to the translation, Prabhupada's translation. The word meanings. Paramam vachah, the supreme instruction. Okay, so Prabhupada translates sarva guyatamam as the most confidential of all. Guya means again. Shrunu, just hear from me. The supreme instruction. And then he adds something interesting. He says, Ishtasi, Ishtahasi, you are dear. Ishta means you are very dear to me. Drudam, very dear to me. So Krishna is speaking to Arjuna, he's calling him, you are most dear to me. Tato vakshami te hitam. And I'm going to speak vakshami for your benefit. So that's the verse. Let's look at the translation. And it says, because you are my very dear friend, Krishna is speaking to Arjuna here, I am speaking to you my supreme instruction, the most confidential knowledge of all. Hear this from me, for it is for your benefit. And therefore we should all hear it, because it is for our benefit. Krishna says, that their devotees are extremely dear to him, not only Arjuna. So Arjuna, you could say, is the representative of the infinite devotees. And these words are being spoken for our benefit, to us, to all of us. And who is relaying that, those words? Srila Prabhupada is telling us Krishna's most secret, most supreme instruction. So let's go to the next verse. See what this instruction is. So this is the instruction he gives. There are 8 verses here. We are looking at the second one now in this series. Manmana bhava, mad bhakto, mad yaji, mam namaskuru, mam evaishyasi satyam te pratijane priyasi. There is another verse like this in the 9th chapter, at the ending of the end of the 9th chapter, which is a chapter on bhakti yoga. And that verse is Mammana Bhava Madhvakto Madhyaji Mam Namaskuru Mam Evaishyasi Yuktva Evam Atmanam Matparayana. So there is a difference. The last part of that verse is different, but the essence is the same. So that's why he used the word again. Bhuyaha means what? What am I speaking again? This verse. This is the supreme instruction, most confidential instruction from the Bhagavad Gita for all of us. Mammana Bhava. So let's look at the word meanings. Prabhupada says, mat manaha, thinking of me, bhava, just become. So, become somebody who always thinks about me. That's the first instruction. Mad bhaktaha, my devotee. He's not saying become a karma yogi, he's not saying become a jnana yogi, an ashtanga yogi. These are all the different types of Veda yogas that are prevalent in Vedic society, even today. He's saying bhakta. So this is the supreme instruction. There are other instructions in the Bhagavad Gita. One of the famous ones is Karmanneva Adhikaraste. There used to be this TV serial in India called the Mahabharata. And the opening song has this verse in it. And everybody knows this verse, Karmanneva Adhikaraste. And that's the essence of the Bhagavad Gita. But it isn't, because that verse talks about Karma Yoga. But what is this saying? My supreme, most confidential instruction is mad bhaktaha, become my devotee, which is bhakti yoga. A devotee by definition is executing the process of bhakti yoga. Mad bhaktaha. And what is bhakti yoga? We just did that in the temple. For 50 minutes we were dancing and singing Krishna's names. That's the primary anga of, primary limb of bhakti. So we are already executing in this temple at 4:15 every Sunday the most supreme confidential instruction that Krishna has given. Become my devotee, madhbhakta. Mad yaji, the word yaji is interesting. You might have heard of yajna, sacrifice. So yaji is connected there. Mad yaji, my worshipper, one who offers. A worshipper is one who offers whatever he possesses or she possesses to Krishna, to God. Madhyaji, my worshipper, man namaskuru, offer your obeisances to me. Maam eva eshasi, eshasi means you will come. And the part I like about this verse, this verse was one of the first ones I came across in the Bhagavad Gita and it appealed to me. Is because God is promising something here in a very affectionate way. Mame vashyasi satyam te pratijane priyasi me. You are most dear to me. There the word comes again from the previous verse. Krishna is saying, Arjuna, you are very dear to me and therefore I promise to you. And he reiterates it. Satyam te. Truly I promise to you. I don't just promise, but definitely. Take my word for it. You do these things and you will come to me. This is Krishna's promise. Not only to Arjuna, of course, but to all of us. For all eternity, all devotees who are going to take up the process of bhakti yoga have Krishna's endearing promise that you will come to me. Mame vaishyasi satyam te pratijane priyasi me. So let's look at the translation. Always think of me, become my devotee, worship me, and offer your, I don't know how to say that word, homage. Some people say like it. I like to say homage. Unto me, thus you will come to me without fail. I promise you this because you are my very dear friend. This is The first instruction. Become my devotee. All these different aspects of devotional service. And you will come to me without fail. So let's go to the next one. The next instruction is interesting. And it says, he says, Sarva Dharman Parityajya. All these verses are celebrated in the devotional universe. Everybody knows them. Back and forth, right? Everybody knows these verses. Sarva Dharman Parityajya Mamekam Sharanam Raja. Aham Tvam Sarva Papebhyo Mokshayishyami Mashuchah. So, let's go to the word by word meanings. Sarva Dharman, all varieties of religion, this is a radical statement. Parityajya, give up. Krishna is saying to Arjuna, and by extension to all of us. Mam ekam sharanam raja. So, mam is unto me, ekam, only. Only me, take shelter of only me. And that's what it means. Abandon everything else. Any other religions, we'll examine what that means. Aham tvam sarva papebhyo mokshayishyami. I will, so he's saying, papebhyo is from sinful reactions, mokshayishyami, will deliver, ma shuchah, don't worry. So let's look at the translation. Abandon all varieties of religion and just surrender unto me. I shall deliver you from all sinful reactions, do not fear. So this is Krishna's promise continuing in these verses. So, just to recap, he said, I'm going to tell you the essence, the most supreme secret. Then he said, and this is the secret, become my devotee, do these things. Then he says, he promises, and you will come to me. Okay, you'll come to me. So maybe I should explain what that means, you'll come to me. We are here, but there is another reality just like this. You know, there is a room, there are windows to it, there are doors in that room. And just like we're sitting here, other people are sitting in another reality. In that reality, there is no atoms, and there is no electrons, protons, there is no matter. And there is no energy of the sun or the moon, there is no such thing. In that place is pure spirit, pure non-matter. And the experience in that place is always of joy. There is no suffering. It is not true that one has to experience suffering to know what joy or happiness is. That place is a place where there is constant happiness. There is no suffering. This might seem like a utopia, a enticement for people to take up religion, but it is far more sophisticated than that. So, just like we accept that we are in this reality right now, I exist, I'm sitting here, I can't explain how I exist, you know, how I came about, how my body works, who's, you know, I am here and I gotta figure out what should I do with my time. What should I do? Maybe I should watch some football and try to forget that I have to solve this problem of me, that I exist. Or, I inquire into my existence and the answer from the Bhagavad Gita is that there is another reality where there is pure happiness, there is no matter there. It's pure spirit, nothing ends, there's no frustration, there's no death, there's no birth, there is eternal existence. And there is eternal love, loving exchanges between individuals, just like individuals are sitting in this room, in that reality there are individuals that are right now exchanging loving relationships and enjoying eternally and perpetually, and while we suffer here in misery. That's the essence of Jnana Yoga. Is that the soul is trapped in the body and it's suffering in this world, and the solution has to be found. The solution is bhakti. So as it is not difficult for us to accept that yes, I exist and I have these relationships and there are all these people, in the same way, why should it be difficult to accept that there is a spiritual reality, there are spiritual people and they are existing and we want to go there. And that's what Krishna is saying. Mame Vashyasi, you will come to me into that reality. You will step from this world of matter, you'll take a step into the world of spirit, where I live. You'll come to my home, my abode, my city, my citizens, my friends, my relatives, parents, and all that. Transport yourself to my reality. That's what Krishna is saying here. But to do that, we need to do bhakti. That's the supreme instruction, bhakti. So that verse contains an instruction, and it contains the destination that we'll get upon following that instruction. So the Bhagavad Gita has so much depth in every verse. Anyway, so here, now this is a, you could kind of call it a provocative verse. What is he saying? Abandon all religion and surrender unto me. I shall deliver you from all sinful reactions. Do not fear. So, various ways to understand it. Maybe we should quickly look at Prabhupada's purport. I haven't read it in some time. If it's long, then maybe make it short. Let's keep going. Yeah, keep going. Oh, too fast. I can't read that. Even I can't read that fast. Okay, so from what I gathered so far, Prabhupada was saying that there are other religions. By religions, he's mapping them onto jnana, ashtanga, karma, and all these other processes. And he's saying, give those processes up. That was the first paragraph, from what I noticed. And then Prabhupada is quoting the famous verse on surrender, what it means to surrender. What does it mean to surrender? That was a tough one for me to understand and compute. Even now it is. How do you surrender to someone? You know, what do you do? So, anukulyasya sankalpaha pratikulyasya varjanam. This is a famous verse from the Hari Bhakti Vilas. Rakshishyati iti vishvasah gopitritve varnam tatha. Anukulyasya sankalpaha, accepting that which is favorable to become a devotee. And what is that which helps us become a devotee? Other devotees. So, accept the friendship of the devotees. When Prabhupada started this organization, he tried to start it in India first. He called it the League of Devotees. That was his name, chosen name. Now it's called the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. The purpose of the society is this, is to give the company of devotees. And that is favorable. So we accept that. That is favorable for devotion, to advance in devotion. Because we discuss about Krishna. We remind it of Krishna. Pratikulyasya varjanam. Anything that stands in the way, we give up. So, what stands in the way of devotion? Any suggestions? Is there anything that stands in the way of devotion? Material desires? Yes? Non-devotee association. Envy. Nemagraha, bluntly following rules and regulations without understanding why those rules exist. Anything else? Bad choice of free will. Yes. Ego. Worry. Oh, that's a good one. Laziness. Yes. Lust. So the question is whether these things correlate with religion. You could say lust is the religion of some. Certainly it was the case 40 years ago in the hippie movement, for example. But there could be other aspects of religion that could lock us into not being devotees of Krishna, not being able to accept Krishna, not being able to put our trust in religion, in devotees. And the prominent religion of the time today is rationality. That's the prominent religion. Science. Evidence-based science that tells us that matter is all there is, and energy is all there is, and we can explain everything mechanistically, including the intricate workings of our own body. We don't need any other explanation. We can figure out a human being through sociological studies, psychological studies, anthropological studies, historical studies. We can study everything and analyze everything and have neat little explanations for everything. So once that's done, what's the need for God? That's the superstition for the, what is it, the opium of the masses, right? This is also a religion. That God doesn't exist because I cannot detect him with my microscope. He refuses to come to my lab and submit to my experiment. And therefore he doesn't exist. He is a type of religion. And so Krishna is saying, give up all these religions. They might sound very compelling, very attractive. We all have our causes, right? The Democrats have their Democrat religion. The Republicans have their Republican religion. Everybody has a religion. The word religion can mean many things in this context. The essence is we are attached to these things, and it gets in the way of the main job that we have to get on with, which is bhakti. Time's running out. We have to get on with it. That's what Krishna is saying. Follow the second instruction. You know, do things that are favorable for devotion, give up things that are not favorable. And so that's the essence of this verse. Sarva dharmam parityajya mam ekam sharanam raja. Only take shelter of me and nothing else. Black and white. It's a very black and white. There is no gray here. No shades of gray. Oh, well, by the way, you can also do this and you could explore this a little bit, but don't worry. No. Mam ekam sharanam raja. No options given. Then, aham tvam sarva papebhyo mokshayishyami mashucha. I will free you from all sins, which is interesting. Why would there be sin? In the Vedic understanding, if one does not perform one's duties as laid down, enjoined by the scriptures, there's also a social structure in Vedic society that includes karma yoga, for example. We have to perform our karmic duties. But giving them up accrues sinful reactions. Sin. It's a sin not to perform scripturally prescribed duties and activities. So Krishna is saying, well, karma yoga, don't worry about it. I got you covered. Do bhakti. Yeah, I know you're going to get sin because you didn't do your prescribed duties in pursuit of bhakti. But I personally free you from all sinful reactions. Don't fear. That's what he's saying. So, alright, let's move on. And maybe I want to give time for discussion and questions. To the next verse, I mean. That's the next verse. Look at the translation directly. It says, this confidential knowledge may never be explained to those who are not austere. So this is confidential knowledge that we just heard. The essence of all knowledge, devotion. And it's unequivocal. Krishna is clearly giving the instructions. Me alone, nothing else. Surrender to me alone, nothing else. All religions given up. All other paths given up. Bhakti is the one path. That's the conclusion of the Gita. Okay? We are close to the end of the Gita now. Actually, this may be one of the second or third last verses. But Krishna is saying this confidential knowledge may never be explained to those who are not austere. There is some qualification to get this. The Bhagavad Gita is one of the most widely studied scriptures in the world. But how many people take up devotion? It's a question. Everybody has their own notion of what it is. You know, what God is or who God is. What God is also an appropriate question. It's not really God with a form, it's formless, etc. All kinds of different conceptions. So those who are not austere, those who are not devoted or not willing to be devoted, those who are, I should read this. This confidential knowledge may never be explained to those who are not austere or devoted or engaged in devotional service, nor to one who is envious of me. Now, what does it mean to be envious of Krishna? So, in this context, Vishnu Chakravarti explains that envious of me means rejecting, denying that I do not have a material body ever. I do not take a material body ever. This is what envious means. See, the concept that a lot of people have is that Krishna was a man, an ordinary man. He came into the world, he fought, he did all the things that the Kshatriyas do. And then he died. You know, there was an arrow that Jara the hunter shot at his foot. It entered his foot. He bled it to death. That's the concept. And so, this is envy. The refusal to accept, especially when the Vaishnava Acharyas establish the conclusion that Krishna is pure spirit. He is never matter. He never comes under the control of matter because matter is his energy. It is his inferior energy. The vexing issue for us is, why are we in this body? We are the soul, not the body. But why are we here? Why are we in this body? And the answer is that we are not in control. We've been put in this situation as a reward for our desires. But if I decide to say, I'm not this body, so let me go jump off the cliff and I'm going to float, it's not going to work. I'm under the control of gravity, I can't deny that. I can't start flying if I want it. But Krishna is not under control of gravity. Gravity is under the control of Krishna. He doesn't take a material body. This material body is filled with bones and blood, pus, mucus, that's not Krishna. Eternally pure. Sada nirastu kuhakam satyam param dhimahi. So, when he comes to the world, which he does, and speaks the Bhagavad Gita, he comes in his original spiritual form, into the world of matter. And so people would grumble, well, who's going to, why would God come to this place of filth? Then Prabhupada responded, who's going to stop him? Who can stop him? If he wants to come, he can come. So, that's envy. We have to accept Krishna is a person with a spiritual form. Another type of envy is, no, God doesn't have a spiritual form. Actually, there is only one homogeneous existence where we all are in suspended animation. And there is no two, there is only one. You and I are one. And after, we just are an illusion. And one day we'll become merged into the eternal existence. Blah, blah, blah. I don't know what that means, what I just said. But all that's envy. So let's go to the next verse. Okay, I think I'll skip the... We'll stop here. This verse would sound like self-promotion. So we'll stop. Talk about questions or discussion. Any questions? Microphone, please. Yes.
So Krishna says that he's the only way. The other religions of the world also say they're the only way. So what's your comment?
The Bhagavad Gita is not a sectarian book. It is a universal book. It is spoken in a context, in a cultural context. They are real people. They have certain ways of dressing and they have a certain language. But God can manifest in any language. Right? So he's not limited to language. He can manifest in English. He can give instructions in English. He can give instructions in Arabic. He can give instructions in Sanskrit. But the essence is the same. What is the essence? Become my devotee. Which religion is going to argue with that? That's one instruction. Second is, offer obeisances. Look into the other religions of the world. Do they not offer obeisances to God? So the differences between religion have to do with time, place, circumstance, local cultures. The message of the Gita manifests in the context of a culture because you can't remove culture from us. You know, human beings are defined by being in societies and being in cultures. So necessarily there are going to be differences in the way the revelation comes down in different cultures. But the reason the Bhagavad Gita is inclusive and not sectarian is because it has the same common message as all other religions. And God can have different names, but there is only one God. Namekam Sharanam Raja. What does everybody say? There is one God. Well, Krishna is saying, I am that God. What's sectarian about that? There is only one God. You know, if you take a biology textbook and you translate it into Urdu, you know, the people who study Urdu, they're going to read Urdu. They're not going to understand English. But it doesn't mean that there is sectarianism because the same facts are common to both textbooks, right? The same ideas, overall ideas. The analogy fails, I know, because the cultures are different, whereas the language of science is uniform. But still, you can see kind of the connection. So no, the Bhagavad Gita is not sectarian. It's a universal message. And Krishna doesn't say that, you know, the Christians are not going to come to me. He doesn't say that. He doesn't say the Muslims are not coming to me. I mean, he's not sectarian, you see. It's a universal message. It's one God, and perform devotion, you know, offer worship, offer obeisances, become my devotee, you come to me. So, okay, there's no sectarianism. Right?
So, they could go through Christ, they could go through Allah, and so on.
I'm not an expert on religions. And I am a practitioner who am myself not sure where I'm going to go after this life. So for me to sit here and say, well, you know, if you do that religion, you're not going to go, or you're going to go, both of it, I'm not qualified to answer. I can tell you that the Bhagavad Gita says this. That's the limit of my, you could say, qualifications to talk on this. So maybe there's somebody here who can answer this question. Whether somebody who is a Christian will go to Krishna or a Muslim. Vexing questions for me. Two hands at the back.
Thank you. With your permission, I'd like to address that question. I just read something written by Paramahansa Yogananda. He explains it this way. When in the Bible they talk about I forget the verse, but it's in chapter John that says, no one shall come to the Father. I am the way, I am the truth, I am the light. No one shall come to the Father except through me. Jesus spoke this, and by and large, if you go to church, what you'll find is the Christians preach that because of this verse, Jesus Christ is the only way to God. And what Paramahansa Yogananda explained is that that is a complete misinterpretation of what Jesus Christ actually was saying. What Jesus Christ was saying is that when by them saying he was the only begotten Son, they were not referring to his human body. They were referring to his state of consciousness that had aligned itself with God consciousness. And that the part about the only begotten Son is referring to his Christ consciousness. So to understand this a little better, Yogananda Ji gives an example. What he says is that, think of it this way, the rays of the sun shine equally upon both a lump of coal and a diamond. But and coal and diamond are both made of carbon. But it is only the diamond that is able to receive the sun's rays and reflect them back out, because the diamond has reached, you know, a different state of existence than the lump of coal. And so this is the same as Christ, as Buddha, as Krishna, as Ram. These are all people who achieve God consciousness and are able to receive and reflect the light back. So any one of them could serve as your salvation.
Okay, so Srila Prabhupada was asked these questions many times. I mean, I don't know about Paramahansa Yogananda's qualifications to talk about Christianity, you know, whether there's an expert on Christianity. If you go and present this case to the Christians, I don't think they're going to accept that. So this debate can go on and on. Yeah. Let the experts on Christianity speak about Christianity. Our business is to talk about Krishna consciousness. The other point I was going to make is, Prabhupada was approached and asked about Jesus Christ. The Prabhupada said, we accept Jesus Christ as a spiritual master. You know, I remember a story, a moving story, where Prabhupada was in the room and there was a cross on the wall, and a devotee came into the room and Prabhupada was crying. And he asked him, why are you crying? And he said, look, they crucified their spiritual master. So Prabhupada had genuine connection. He could see sadhus. So Prabhupada, you know, so we take instruction from Prabhupada on how to approach religion, different religions. So we respect them. We accept that people like Christ, Prabhupada said very charitable things about Muhammad, Prophet Muhammad. We accept that, yeah, they gave revelations to their cultures, their unique cultures, as was required by time, place and circumstance. We have no beef. Beef is the wrong word in this temple. So we have no quarrel with them. But maybe we move on to another topic, unless this is an issue that's not settled with verses from the Gita. I prefer to speak about what the Bhagavad Gita has to say. So,
Hare Krishna Prabhu, thank you so much for a very nice class.
Thank you.
Could you tell me why Krishna has to say that this is the most confidential? Instead, he can say that this is the topmost instruction, or I'm going to give you the final instruction. Why does he have to stress the word?
The word confidential comes from the fact that priyo or ishtosi, you know, these words are very affectionate. There is affection, there is exchange of affection between Krishna and Arjuna. This is not a didactic presentation of philosophy, this is not what's going on here. There is an exchange of love between Krishna and Arjuna. These words explain it. Another place Krishna explains this, expresses his affection is in the 6th chapter. Nahi kalyana krit kashchit durgatim tat gacchati. There the word tata is used. Again, it's a very endearing, intimate form of address. So, that's why it's confidential. It's meant for devotees, and devotees and Krishna have intimate relations. They're not just some technical treaties. You know, this is an exchange of the heart. Emotions are in it. And therefore, Krishna doesn't easily broadcast this, you know. He's saying, no, this is secret. It's between you and me. It's like a friend talking to a friend. You know. So, does that answer your question? Okay. Is a question here?
Hare Prabhu, Prabhuji.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Okay, thank you for a very nice class. One question I have is, we had a program over our home the other day, and this lady, she asked a question. She said, well, how do I know that this book that you're reading from is the Song of God? You know, there's a whole lot of books out there, so how do I know this, you know? So I tried to explain it to her.
What did you say?
Well,
If you want me to answer, I can try, but I would like to hear what you say.
Okay. I told her it was some other matter of faith, but then I went back to some memories that Prabhupada, he was asked a similar question by a cardinal, and the cardinal, and so Prabhupada said, "Is Krishna consciousness is about feeling Krishna. It's something that you actually feel in your heart, you know." So I sort of explained to the lady, but she was eating meat, but anyway. But I sort of explained to her how I came to Krishna consciousness, and it was like coming to the temple and just seeing the deities and things like that. So it was more of a feeling connection in my heart.
Thank you. You want me to say anything on that? Or?
Yeah.
Okay. This is an interesting story. Prabhupada, I think, challenged his disciples. How do you know Krishna is God? Somebody said, he said in Bhagavad Gita, he's in the Bhagavatam, this is, you know, quoting verses. He said, no, we don't believe you. I mean, he's acting the devil's advocate. We don't believe in these books. How do you know Krishna is God? And somebody said, Prabhupada, I can feel it. And I said, that's the answer. But then on another occasion, he was asked this question. And the same devotee said, Prabhupada, because we can feel that Krishna is God. He said, no, because the Bhagavad Gita says he is God. So, Desha Kala Patra, depending on the person, you have to answer the question. See how they take it. Prabhupada was asked these questions, and Prabhupada would invariably quote this verse, Asita Devala Vyasaha Swayam Chaiva Bhavishime Sarvameta Dhrutam Manne Yanmam Vadisikeshava. That there are all these different great personalities who have accepted Krishna. Asita, he would go through the list, Devala, Vyasa, and Arjuna. These great people have accepted him. And it's true. There's so many great people in our parampara that have followed the instructions of the Bhagavad Gita and attain God. So if you're serious about it, if you really want Krishna, you're not, you know, stuck in your culture or whatever, evaluate the Gita through an impartial eye. You want to believe it? Don't believe it. As I said, that's your business. But, you know, we are presenting the words of Krishna. If you want to accept, you can. And why wouldn't somebody see the beautiful logic of the Bhagavad Gita? Bhagavad Gita is not, you said it's a matter of faith, but I would counter that it's also a matter of decisions. You know, before the Sarva Gavitamam verse, Krishna says, what's the previous verse? Anybody remember? Basically, he says that, you know, do as you see. Vimrushya etad asheshana yathechasi tathakuru. You deliberate on this fully and then decide what you have to do. Even God in the Bhagavad Gita is not demanding faith. No, if you don't believe in this. No, he's saying, you think about these things. I presented this to you. Look at the logic. Look at, you know, analyze it. See the truths of it. Use your intelligence. Meditate on this and then choose your choice. Make your choice. You know, make your decision. That's encouraging to me on a personal level. Okay? Many people say, well, I got to believe in the Bhagavad Gita now, you know. Why should I believe in this? Another answer, of course, is take up the process and the proof is in the pudding, right? So, experience. Chant and be happy. Let experience be your guide. So there are various answers, many discussions.
Just one more comment.
Yes.
I think what this conversation is about also is looking at our parampara and then look at the character and the qualifications of each person in that parampara, especially Prabhupada. I mean, all they have to do is just read about his life and talk with the devotees about, you know, those that have associated with him intimately. About his character. That speaks volumes to me.
Thank you very much. You have 5 minutes. Any last questions? It would be great. Okay, thank you very much. Jai Gopi Manandi.